Welcome to Color Country Politics, where we discuss all the important political issues facing Iron County, Utah. Our guests include elected officials and community leaders in or representing Iron County.
This is Episode 52, 2020 Candidate Forum, Willie Billing, State House 71.
And welcome back to Color Country Politics. We are so excited that you are here on our new fabulous Zoom format. I'm Jenny Hendricks, and I am here with my co-host,
Jesse Harris.
And we're thrilled today. We're really excited to have Willie Billings on with us.
Hello.
Willie is running for State House of Representatives in District 71.
Yes.
So, yeah, we're really excited. Thank you for making time to come.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the invitation.
You got it. So, Willie, let's just jump right in, and why don't you tell everybody about yourself? Like, give us a little bit about your history, you know, and how you got to be here.
Okay. All right. Thank you. I've lived in Hurricane about 30 years now. I grew up in Monroe, Utah, at South Sevier High School up there, and my wife and I met up there, and when I got through with a little bit of college down in California, played a little college basketball down there, very little, and I found out I wasn't all that good, and so decided I had to move on with my life. But and then I moved back up here, and my wife and I got married. We went to SUU, and then after 4 years up there, we moved down to Hurricane because my wife's family is kind of one of the founding families of the Hurricane. She related everybody here. And in fact, we were talking the other day, and the canal, the Hurricane Canal, the history behind that is why Hurricane Valley is even here. That brought water here, and we were discussing it, looking through the genealogy. And she has an uncle, a great-great-grandfather, I guess, William Wright, that was the very first canal rider that rode the canal at night with the lanterns keeping it open and clear so water could come. And what's interesting is the very last canal rider is her uncle, William Wright. So that just gives you some type of idea of her history and how long her family's been engaged here. And so we love it here. I looked at Hurricane when we first moved here. There were 7,000 people back, I think, in 1990-ish. It was kind of like a small town to me, like where I came from, Monroe. So we love it. We've raised our five children here. We now have five grandchildren. Aww. And just loving that. Okay. I got involved in the political arena years ago, probably 14, 16 years ago. I went to a caucus meeting to find out what caucus meant. Okay. That's the reality. So I'm sitting in there in this meeting, and a guy, just before it started, a guy kicked me from behind, and I turned around, and it was Brad Last, the guy, my opponent in this. And we're friends. He's a great man. Him and his wife, we love them. And so he says, Willie, you got to run for precinct chairman. I'm going, I came to find out what caucus meant. And he says, if you don't, you know, anyway, I ran and got elected there. And so I was a precinct chairman. Then they asked me to serve as leg chairman. And then I served as 2 years as the state vice chairman. Excuse me, the state chairman for Washington County. And then I was blessed to run and serve as the vice chairman for the state Republican Party for a couple of years. And I've been involved for a lot of years in the SEC, Constitution and Bylaws Committee. And then my wife and I had to take a little sabbatical from all of that. She came down with cancer. And then I got really ill myself with a couple of things. So politics takes a back seat when that stuff hits you. So Here we are. She's doing fantastic, recovering from the cancer. I'm doing well, and we are re-engaged and wanting to serve our communities, and so here we are.
That's great. And I trust that you have finally figured out what caucus means.
Yeah. I know. Yeah, it's not just something that sounds like a bad cold or a disease. So,
right.
Well, some people would argue it's a disease, but what do they know?
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Well, thank you for that. Now, let's kind of pivot a little bit and tell us, why are you running for this office?
Well, when you run a business, I'm an investment advisor representative. I own an investment retirement planning firm, and I've got 150 different representatives that work with me up through the state and in Idaho. And you run a business for 32 years. You recreate the way I do, which is I love to hunt. I I was one of the founding members of the Tri-State ATV Club 19 years ago, and I served as their first president of that club with a lot of other fantastic people that put that whole thing together. But you work in those organizations, you raise a family through the school system, you run a business, you see how economics and politics affects you, your family, your children, your clients. I've said now for quite a few years, if you want to see the really, really nasty part of politics, go become part of a Little League organization. Okay. That is the ground level of bad politics going on there. But you see all this stuff, but you also gain a lot of confidence through knowledge and seeing what's going on. And you recognize, hey, there's some things that I know now and I've become good at, like budgeting. And I worked with budgets for families and business owners and organizations for years. And I just know how to dig in. And I recognize that we don't have a revenue problem in the state. We have plenty of income coming in. It's an allocation, budgeting and allocation problem. And for some reason, government entities don't think they need to subscribe to free markets and capitalism and all the rules that revolve around that and actually do proper budgeting. Now, our state legislature, they do a good job by balancing the budget. But there's still places where they're allocating hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars to places and then coming back and saying, we need to raise your taxes again and again and again. And then this last tax restructuring act was a major tax increase on several things. And they just didn't come out and prove that it was a net tax decrease. And I'm good at that stuff. And I couldn't find any way, shape, or form where it was going to be a net tax decrease, just increase in taxes to our citizens. And I just finally said, people have been asking me for 8 or 9 years to do this. And I've always said no for two reasons. It's not really an aspiration of mine. I didn't ever think about this. I run my financial firm and I guide elk hunts and deer hunts and moose hunts and ride my four-wheel, And so, but people have asked me for a long time. I said no, because that wasn't something that was an aspiration. And quite frankly, Brad Last, a dear friend of mine. But we've come to a point where I'm at a point in my life where you cannot just be consumers. At some point, we all have to be producers too. We have to give back. And I recognized some problems that I think I can help fix on land issues and other things. And I didn't like the way the tax structures are going. And I knew that was wrong and there's better ways to do it. And so I just started engaging in thought process. And I asked about 70 people in town, just randomly. I mean, I didn't call them. I just ran into them. In fact, the vast majority, probably the highest percentage, I ran into an Ace Hardware in Hurricane. And I would just run into them. And we would have a conversation. Some of them I knew well, some of them I knew a little bit, and I would just ask. And they would just say things like, he's just been there too long. I would get that over 18 years. It's a long time. And most people would call that a career, especially in state politics. And then the fact that he not only voted for that last tax referendum, he is the co-sponsor of that tax bill that got crushed by the referendum so vastly. Just a lot of people came to me and I had 70 people say, hey, we'd vote for you before I ever found one that said they'd vote for Brad. And I thought, man, there is a problem here. And I was trying to push it off. But the more I engaged in the process, the more support I started gathering. And I thought, these people are asking me. And then the current mayor asked me to do it. And the past mayor of Hurricane has asked me to do it. And the past mayor of Liberica asked me to do it. The stuff like that starts happening to you. I'm going, maybe I should. So I started thinking about that stuff. And then of course in my videos, the truth is I went home and talked to my wife. I said, Nan, all this is happening. What should I do? And she said, literally this is what she said. Willie, you've been telling people for over 15 years that the exact people we want in office are the ones that don't really want to be there. Maybe you should swallow your own pill. And that kind of got me. She's good at that, by the way. So that's kind of why I'm doing it. I mean, there's issues and there's things I'm working on that I want to do, but that's kind of the heart of what started this whole thing.
Well, that's great. So let's talk about some of those issues. What are a few things that you hope to accomplish if you're elected?
Well, one is the taxation. I just don't feel like real, true conservatives default to raising taxes. And having worked with budgets for 32 years now and all kinds of them, I understand that they're all the same and that there's inflow and outflow of cash. And that there is discretionary income that that people or businesses or governments have, that they choose what to do with that discretionary income. And most of the time, they don't choose wisely on what to do with that money. But also, within an individual or a business's budget or a family's budget, you cannot automatically default to just increasing revenue to fix your spending problems. See, that is a basic 101 in just basic finance. You don't always default to say, I'll just make more money, I'll just bring in more money to fix your budgeting problems. You've got to dig in first and do the hard work, the unpopular work of looking what programs are in there and maybe been embedded in there for years or generations that just aren't paying the price anymore and paying the dividends they need to and aren't necessary, and cut some of those things. And then there's things that they're worthy to spend money on, but if you're having to increase revenue, you don't spend quite so much. You know, and government entities should have to operate the same as a business entity. Okay, when they're having budgeting problems, they've got to dig in there and cut expenses and make those decisions, because they can't just default to bringing in revenue, because they just can't do that. They have to go out and make more money, where the government entities, they say, well, let's bring in more revenue. Well, 100% of the time, that's saying we're going to raise your taxes some way, shape, or form. Yeah. And that is not the way to do it. It never will be the way to do it. So that's one issue. I just know there's better ways of doing that. But it has to come from a better philosophical standpoint, not a government-entrenched standpoint. So that's one of the things. You know, our educational system, K through 12 specifically, everybody talks about funding for higher education, and we're spending hundreds of millions of dollars into our state universities every year. I think Dixie College got close to $50 million again this year. Yet they're coming saying, we want to raise your taxes. Okay. Well, what about K through 12, where those college students are coming from?
Yeah.
Okay. There's a real issue there, and that I've talked to now, it's up to 30 different teachers. And you know what's neat? None of them are complaining about their salaries. Now, granted, they're making, I think our teachers are the second lowest paid teachers in the United States, and that has to be addressed, okay? But the thing they talk about, and all 30 of them said that they agreed and they have experienced this, that somewhere during the course of the year, they have to pull money out of their pockets to make sure the classroom is properly supplied. That's nonsense. They should not be having to do that. That's a budgeting and allocation problem again. So we shift a little bit of money away from maybe higher education and do a better job in our K through 12. And that's just one example. Obviously, there's lots of ways of doing that. But I just believe that teaching should be viewed as one of the most well-respected professions out there. But we treat them like, you know, lower-end employees. And they're not getting their due. They're not getting what they deserve from a support standpoint. They're just not. And any money that's being allocated to that educational system, you see a lot of it going up to administration and bigger buildings, and that doesn't make a difference to the kids. It just doesn't. What we do in the classroom makes the difference. So I'm a big advocate of, when you're going to spend money, fight before you spend a dollar. Find out what the point of productivity is. Where is it that dollar can be spent where it has the most power to do the most good for whatever you're trying to accomplish? And that's not what's happening right now. So that the funding of that is a big issue for me. Lands, you know, I recreate, I hunt, I assist people for years in doing that. And I've never charged anybody a dime for me taking them out. A lot of handicapped guys did. But a lot of these guys and gals, they'll get, draw some big elk tag or deer tag or turkey tag. They don't have $10,000 to go pay a guide. So I'll get 10 or 12 calls a year. And I just take them out and spend that time and build relationships. And we have a ball. Just took a young girl up 14 years old with her dad the other day, and she got her first turkey. She was ecstatic. So I'm always in the mountains. So BLM, you know, Forest Service lands, state trust lands, all of those things I'm very, very familiar with. And I understand there's some serious problems in the Division of Wildlife. It's become a government organization where you're guilty until proven innocent on everything. And then the way the lands are being managed by the federal government has created these wildfires, and they're shutting public out of public lands. That can't happen. We're going to stop that. So there's a few of my issues. I've got, like, in the high schools, where's the Constitution really taught? Where's the love of country and patriotism really taught? Our kids get out, it's hard to love the United States of America when you don't understand the basis behind why it's so great. It's really tough. Why isn't that a major thing in our educational system? We can fix that as a state legislature. So that's a few of them. I've got more, but that's some of my basics.
Well, those are some pretty worthy goals, I think. Good information. So I think there's a lot of stuff that most people could point to at the legislature that needs improvement. I think it's sort of a constant thing. You're never going to have a perfect legislature. Is there anything in your opinion that the legislature is currently doing well?
I think there's a lot of things they're doing well. Obviously we are touted and mathematically and by lots of different measurements, we are the best managed state in the United States. Mm-hmm. And that's attributed to, I think, the legislature that's there, the legislators. And I think that goes back longstanding to the way we find them through the caucus convention method. I'm an advocate for that. Okay. I don't believe in SB 54. I fought against it when I was the vice chairman of the state party. I just don't believe that I wouldn't feel good about using a private organization's name, logo, and resources. And I bypass the very way they vet their candidates and their leadership. It doesn't work for me. So I didn't, and I won't gather signatures. I fought against that. Brad voted for it back when it came up, and he's using it well. He's gathered signatures to bypass the primary. And I just, the way I look at that is if you two are people that know me well in town, you know me best. And if you're delegates and you get to talk to me and vet me and ask me the tough questions, well, you're going to have information about me really. But yet if we go out to the voting public and all they get are sound bites, they don't know me. I can send them anything, and that doesn't mean it's the truth. And so the difference between the way the primary voters vote and the delegates is only the difference between the information they're getting. Because there's a bunch of conservative people in there, which is why Democrats don't win here. Not even a dog catcher's a Democrat here. I mean, nobody, right? That proves we're a conservative area, but it's just the difference in the way people get information. So I think the legislature, for the most part, and I've been saying this for years, is a bunch of good men and women. They're just trying to serve their communities. They're doing the best that they can. But anytime people have been there long term, things start to go wrong. Okay? Not all the time, I guess I should, but I think for the vast majority of time, you become part of that system, and it's hard not to think differently. As I've been told by several legislators, well, we just see it from a higher plane. And I say, no, your job, we voted for you. You need to see it from our plane. And the only way we, as a voting public, have to measure whether our legislators are doing what they should do based on what we want, is their voting record. That is the scoreboard. And so a voting record and talking about it and making people aware of voting records is not dirty politics. It is the only measuring stick we have. So anybody that doesn't want you to talk about their voting record, that means they're either embarrassed by it or they know there's something wrong there where they could get beat because of it. So, but by and large, I think the legislature does a really, really good job, better than I think any of the other states. Just good people in there. Brad, he's my opponent, but lives down the street from me, him and his wife, we love him. We're just different politically and different. So.
Now, I've said for a long time that one of the really great things about living in Southern Utah is your political choices are typically conservative and more conservative, which for a conservative person is a great thing. Yeah. So I hear what you're saying.
Well, look at the governor candidates. We have three or four really good governor candidates. I mean, Amy Winter Newton, I think she's a rock star. I wish she'd have had more traction. And, you know, obviously, you know, Greg Hughes is a good option. Thomas Wright's a really good option. Mm-hmm. So we have some really good options there.
Yeah, I agree. I think that there's some really, really good choices. And I've actually been pretty tickled with the way the gubernatorial candidates have been able to get their message out in this, you know, weird COVID thing that we're dealing with, and really putting forth some meaty solutions to things. So that's been really good. Okay. We talked a little bit about what you like that the legislature's doing. What should be improved? If you go to the legislature, what should be improved with you as a part of it?
Well, it's hard because I haven't been there, right? And it's hard to really know until you've sat in those chairs and you've been around it. But part of it I've already spoken about, the allocation, the way we're spending money in Utah. I think there needs to be an environmental, you know, a change in culture there, and the way we view our school teachers. And I just believe I'm hearing and I'm seeing some signs where when you go there and you have something really good that you want to pass, but you have to play games in order to gain the support. And you got to vote for my thing if you want me to vote for yours. I think we need strong leadership that can go up there and be influential because they have good things that they want to do. And each bill is good in its own merit without adding a bunch of stuff. And that stuff, that's a serious problem I'm seeing, is they're taking this bill and adding all this other stuff into it. And I believe bills should be good standing alone on their own. And you don't add a bunch of that stuff in to try to sneak it in and get what you want to do. Those games should not be played. And we see that taking place. And being able to be influential and gain support for things you want to do without feeling encumbered by, I have to play those games to get support for mine. I just feel like we can do a better job of that. And if anybody tries to play those games with me, they're going to understand I'm not a rookie and I'm not a freshman. Okay? I'll get support for what I want to do because of the validity it stands for. But I'm not going to play those games. And I've been told, we'll just put it that, I've been told that if I don't go up there and play games, I will ruin my political career. And the individual that told me that, I had fun with. They said, Willie, if you don't do it that way, you're going to ruin your political career. And I just said, hey, I don't have one. I answer to the voters. If I do what's right, what the voters want me to do, regardless of what maybe the governor, lieutenant governor, or leadership wants me to do, I can hold my head up and say, I'm going to get reelected because I'm doing what they want me to do. And I think we need more of that culture up there. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, absolutely. Jesse, did you have something to jump in with?
I just wanted to comment. You know, your focus on process reminds me of what Rob Bishop said in an interview with Utah Policy earlier this year about how good process matters far more than good policy, because you may have control of the policy, but the process is what chooses whether or not it lives or dies. And so I think you make a good point there. Process matters a lot.
It about does.
How you get things done.
Yeah. Well, one other thing, I think we need to change the culture up there. is last year when the legislature finished, they were bragging about the fact that they had passed more laws than any other year, a little over 500. And I just don't believe at all that that should be our goal set. I don't think our goal as legislators should be our job security and how good we did is based on how many laws we passed. I don't think that should be the goal. Okay? It's quality, not quantity. Okay? And so I just don't think the goal shouldn't be, hey, let's pass as many bills as we can. Let's make as many laws as we can and pat ourselves on the back. That is just not the way this should operate. So
no, it's a terrible way to measure productivity.
Yeah. Legislation should not be measured by quantity. It's how our families affected. What are the unintended consequences? That tax bill that came through, holy cow. I mean, not only was it not good, but the messaging was pathetic. I mean, when you get a referendum that basically in a 3-week period of time with 130,000-140,000 people crushed it, they failed miserably at messaging and proving what they were, why it was good. Well, the onus is on them, you guys. They can't, I don't believe in, well, they elected me, they should trust me. There's this thing called trust but verify. We need more of the public verifying, knowing what's in these things and checking that out. And I'll be a big advocate for that and building teenage Republicans clubs all across the state and all the high schools. That is huge for me. Okay, I want to start the process of these kids understanding the Constitution and if they want to start a Democrat club, go for it. I mean, whatever. But let's teach the Constitution and why America is great.
I love that. I've been a huge advocate of the teenage Republican clubs for years, and it's sometimes difficult to get traction going to get those built, but I think that's an absolutely worthy goal. I would love to see more of that in the high schools, and it can be really fun.
When I was the vice chairman, I got quite a few of them started across the state.
Yeah.
But then when Nan went down with colon cancer and, you know, it just kind of, but there's some good people there, and be careful if you say you like that, because you live in Cedar and my up there, and so I'm probably going to come to you and say, help me find the people to get this thing started in the high schools of Cedar.
Well, here's one thing that is not a really big secret about me is I can't say no. Like, if you need my help, I jump in, and it's like, okay, I'll be on another committee. Let's do this.
So, yeah.
Well, so I'm happy to help.
I have a hard time saying no to, except when it comes to policies and procedures. Okay? My wife, I better not go into that, but she's on the city council down here, and she is shaking things up big time. So and she's doing a fantastic job. I'm so proud of her. She's just standing as a strong woman saying no. And that's, we need people that are willing to say no.
Yeah. So. That's great. I've met your wife and she's fabulous. She's absolutely fabulous.
She's good looking too.
I'll leave that to you. All right. Well, tell us a little bit. Is there anything else that you want voters to know about you? And also tell us how to find you on Facebook, the website, just anything that you want to kind of get out there that we haven't asked you already.
Okay. Let me just draw some conclusions here, comparisons. Again, I was against that tax referendum, and I not only signed it, but I gathered signatures against it, against the tax law. So signatures for the referendum, that gets confusing, against that tax law. And I spoke out publicly, and I put the work in and gathered a bunch of signatures, and I recruited a bunch of people to do the same. And so you could tell where I stand on that. But the reality is, and people need to know this, that Brad Last not only voted for it, he's a co-sponsor. He helped to write it. And that's a big deal. And when you sign your name to something, not just voting for it, but you sign as a co-sponsor, you're putting your full stamp of approval on that. And that thing was not a good thing for Utah. Now, I'm not saying we don't need change. I'm not saying we don't need to restructure how we can spend the revenue coming in. But just raising taxes on food and fuel and creating a new tax on services, that was not the way to do that. And so I am against that type of thing wholeheartedly. I don't believe in long-term politicians. Let's go through. I heard this years ago, and I think this is true. I think people need to get in, and if they're going to get in and make laws, they should have to get back out and live under those laws and see how that affects their professional and personal lives. So, I am extremely conservative, but I'm open and available. I will be that guy who, you have my cell phone, you have my email. If you want to Facebook message me, we'll talk and I'll consider what you have to say. And if it's a worthy thing that's good for families, then I'll fight like the Dickens to get it done. But if I say no, it's because I found out it's not good for families. Okay, period. That's the way it's going to be. If people want to get a hold of me, I have a website. It's billings2020.com. Okay, so Billings, it's brand new, and so I had to repeat it to myself to make sure I get. So billings2020.com. They can. My cell phone number is 435-680-2749. And I do have a website. It's wbillings2020@gmail.com. Okay, so if you have a question or if anybody's got a question, you call me, text me, Facebook message me, I will get back to you, and I'll make you a promise. And politicians make promises, right? But this is what I'm going to make, that I want to represent the people, and I want to, and the only way I do that is hear from them and feel what their needs are. So I will be responsive to you, not just during campaign season.
Very good. Okay. Jesse, do you have anything else to wrap up?
No, I got in all the words I need.
Okay. This is such an interesting format because we can only talk one of us at a time. So we have to kind of, anyway, it's good. We're making it work. Making it work.
Yeah.
So, okay. It's billings2020.com. Uh-huh. Is your website, and I'm sure people can find everything that they need there as far as your phone number. I didn't write down your phone number. It's in my phone. Yeah. So billings2020.com. And again, we're sure glad that you had time to come and talk to us today. We appreciate that a lot, and getting your message out to the voters in Southern Utah. Oh, one thing I did want to mention, and I don't know how many, probably everybody who watches this program is aware of it, but District 71 covers Washington County, and then it comes up and kind of wraps around, so you get Summit, Parowan, Paragoon, and Enoch, right?
Correct, yeah.
Okay. That's why we've got District 71 on here. You don't cover Cedar City, but you do cover some of the surrounding areas. So that's important for Iron County voters to know that they are going to have a vote for District 71.
Yeah, and those people that live in those northern, north of Cedar City, I felt like they've been kind of ignored because they're not part of the Washington County area. But their votes and their voice matter just as much. So they need the same representation. That's why I've spent a bunch of time up in Enoch doing meetings, and in Parowan, I'm going to do a lot more moving forward to the primary because those people matter. So
excellent. Okay. Well, I'm sure that everybody in those areas is really grateful for your attention and your time. Because it does make a difference. It really does. So Willie Billings, running for State House, District 71. Thanks again for coming on.
Jenny, thank you so much. And Jesse, thank you for your time. I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Yeah. You bet. All right, everybody. This has been Color Country Politics. Thanks again for being here with us. And we'll see you.
You've been listening to Color Country Politics, a production in cooperation with Utah Politico Hub and graciously sponsored by Century 21 Prestige Realty at 121 North Main Street, Cedar City. Special thanks to Amoeba Crew for use of their song Background Indie Rock, licensed under Creative Commons. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever fine podcasts are found. Also, check out our YouTube channel where we post video of our interviews. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and our website at www.colorcountrypolitics.com.